businesses, and that was a way for Saddam Hussein to increase power in the Arab world, in the global world, to make a lot of money as well, and he did it. And the world said to him, that will be an act of war that could trigger World War III. If you do that, we will defend Kuwait. This was the world speaking, primarily in the person of George Bush the First, the George Bush Sr. He was the President of the United States. We will attack you, we're going to defend Kuwait. And Saddam Hussein called the bluff, and he did it anyway. And the world said, well, now we're going to do this, and you may have just started World War III. And Saddam Hussein's response, and this is important for this issue, but for this moment, was, well, if you're threatening World War III, I'll call your bluff, let's do it. If you attack me for attacking Kuwait, I'm going to rain missiles upon the land of Israel. I'm going to liberate Palestine for the Arab world. I'm going to get rid of all the Jews who are there. I'm going to attack with chemicals. I will send chemical warfare over to Israel as my response to your response to my invasion of Kuwait. Well, it takes a while to unpack that sentence, and it took about 4 months for things to really heat up and develop. And in January of my Shana Aleph, members of Pikud HaOrech, members of the Home Front Command here in Israel, they visited the yeshiva, and they did essentially three things. The first thing they did was they handed everybody, including me and everybody who was here with me, they handed us gas masks. The second thing that they did was that they instructed us how to set up within a 30-second sprint distance from any place we may be on this campus, a specially assigned sealed room, a specially assigned area where we can spend the time in the, at that point, likely event of a missile attack from Iraq, from Saddam Hussein, onto Israel, and perhaps even onto this very yeshiva, to this very location. And the third thing they did was instruct us, or everybody, how to protect yourself if you were unable to wear a gas mask or unable to get to the sealed room. I actually kept a little bit of a journal from that time together, and one of those journal entries described how on the week before the war actually started, and did start, we used those gas masks. There were no chemical weapons, thank God, but there were missiles by the dozens that were rained upon Israel. We saw them in the sky easily. There were people, I think, in Shalvin who could read writing on the missiles. That's how close the missiles were and how low they were to impact on their way down to Tel Aviv. But there were many missiles that were fired, many times that we had to go into those sealed rooms, many times where we heard the sirens, the air raid sirens ringing, here when we were in Karen Biavne. And we had, about a week before, the third thing that they told us to do, an example of it, was that we had a Bayit Chaim. You're familiar with that, I'm sure they still have them here, Bayit Chaim, so they know we went to, it was a lovely Kollel family, and we were able to get a little bit of home-baked cookies and stuff like that, and we went there. I don't know how often we went there, but we happened to have gone there a week before, and on our way out, that Kollel fellow said to us, an Israeli guy, do you have a minute, can you give me a hand? And I said, sure, and a couple of friends of us stayed behind. They had an infant who could not wear a gas mask, an infant who they were not positive they'd be able to get to the room that they were in the event of an air raid siren when there was a babysitter around, anything like that. So we took plastic exactly like this. This is a little bit of deja vu. In a building that we can see from this window, a building right behind those trees over there, took plastic just like this, and we wrapped the crib, again, obviously leaving air holes, and we wrapped the crib in the plastic that I'm looking at right now. Not the first time. Different type of enemy, different type of challenge, different type of problem. And I remember very clearly, what am I telling you about? It's nostalgic, it's certainly an interesting trivia point. It's crazy that twice in my life I've encountered this type of plastic in Yeshiva Karen Biavne, but who really cares? Well, why does that matter at all? So I just want to tell you by way of introduction why I do think it matters a little bit. Not by any measure of getting to know me or my life story, not because I think it's important, although I definitely think it's important, to understand every minute of the incredible history of this yeshiva, and 1990 was a nice chapter in that, the founding of the yeshiva, the hezder components of the yeshiva, things that went on in this spot in Kutzak Yavne before the yeshiva started. This is really interesting and powerful stuff. It's not irrelevant. It's not incidental. This is Admas Kodesh from every perspective, from a Zionistic perspective, from a Tzalta D'Gula perspective, from a Mesiras Nefesh perspective, and of course, from a Talmud Torah perspective, and the Makom Torah. This is Bikar. You're not just learning anywhere. We're not just learning anywhere. Unbelievable Admas Kodesh, unbelievable special opportunity to soak in what is here in this place. But I'll tell you really why I'm mentioning it in the precious few minutes that we have, why I'm choosing to spend a couple of minutes on that by way of introduction. And that is because I'll just share with you something, and I'll use my father as an example, but I don't really need to. I've known his grandfather. My father worked, he's an actuary by training. He worked for a financial consulting firm, essentially a bunch of actuaries who did good things with people's money and their pension funds, and they advised them on a host of other things also. He worked with people, I think, occasionally in the decades that he worked for this company. There might have been a couple of times where there were two or three other Purim people, but by and large, he was working with non-Jews, non-Purim people, and that creates the normal type of friction, if you call it, questions that people would ask, what's with this, or why this, or anything like that. Biggie will tell you that one of the most difficult times he had in explaining anything he did, anything he believed, was in 1990, in the fall of 1990. Somebody would go into his office, poke his head in, or they'd meet at the water cooler, at the printer, on a lunch break. Hey Dave, how's it going? It's going fine, thank God. How's the family? Family's doing well. What are your kids up to? Well, I have my daughter, she's in university in Manhattan. That's great, you must be very proud of her. A couple of kids, they're in high school, they're doing well. You know, his dad, he's, you know, doing his thing and in high school, great. Then I have a kid who's running in the middle. What? This is 1990. World War III is being threatened right now. Yeah, I have a son. He's learning in Israel. Why? That would be the question he could ask. Explain that to me. You have to understand that, again, from the time we have the skies are closed now, and you experience the airport in whatever weird way you experience the airport. But when this was going on in 1990, from about, I guess, October, I don't remember exactly, certainly in November, December, and January, the skies were not closed, but all of the traffic was decidedly one way. Everybody, they canceled the Israel Basketball League, and there was an exodus of every foreign basketball player that was in the country. The university shut down, every university student left. Yeshiva guys, seminary girls, they stayed. YU chartered a plane, and they had people who flew here in the other direction. They had to charter a plane because there were not regular flights that were coming to Israel when war was being threatened in that way, and chemical warfare nonetheless. My father recalls having to explain to people why on earth you would leave your child in a war zone. If you were taking a gap year from NYU or from Syracuse, and you were spending a gap year in Dublin or in Prague or in Milan, Italy, you'd probably head out if a war started. You probably wouldn't go into the uncertainty of a pandemic. You'd stay very, very close to home. There's a reason why there were some empty seats, likely, on the flights that you took when you were here. The reason why, certainly, even if that plane was packed, it was only packed because of mathematics, that we had decreased as a country from the hundreds of flights a day that were coming in to the handful that were actually coming in. Somebody's crazy. Somebody's off base here. Well, I don't know if that's true. I don't know if anybody's crazy at all. There was a greater sense of purpose in 1990 for why we were here. We had to answer that question. Could you imagine being here in 1990 and putting your parents through what you put them through and sleeping through Shoppers? I mean, you feel, again, at the very least, you feel kind of guilty about it. And does that sound familiar to anybody here? I mean, it probably should. If you were going to miss an afternoon Seder, if you were going to space out, you know, in the middle of a shikha, you didn't need to do what you did and quarantine the way you quarantined and have people speaking behind these things and be in a capsule and wear a mask. You could have done all of that much closer to home for much cheaper of a price and with much greater convenience. And there is this unbelievable sense of purpose and mission that permeates virtually everything that we do, and it relates directly to what I started with in terms of taking things for granted. Okay, I hope you forgive me. That was all just by way of introduction. It doesn't make a difference for the amount of time that we're going to be here because we have a hard end to make it for the Rosh Yeshiva Sicha in just a few minutes. But just in terms of my own time management, I thought it would be a mistake not to share that with you by way of introduction. Why is it so important to me? Last time I'll speak personally, I think. But why is it so important to me to be here? So it's interesting. This is a place that I associate with the very definition of Kodesh Elul, of Yom Ha'Ra'im. Try to emulate so many of the things that I felt, learned, and experienced when I was in Yeshiva. And I predict that you will do the same. You will never be able to have a Yom Ha'Ra'im, you'll never be able to have a Slichos night. And I'm not talking about tunes or chazanim here necessarily, although they too had a great impact on me. But you'll never be able to have the proper experience of Elul and of Tishrei without the experiences of this yeshiva, without the experiences of this year, last year, next year, really echoing in your mind. And I feel very much the same way. But if we dig a little bit deeper into that, try to understand why that is. What is so special and what is so strong about the connection between this yeshiva or any yeshiva and Yom Ha'Ra'im? And I think there are two distinct areas in which we can make that connection. One of them, which we've already alluded to a few times and I'm not going to spend any more time on right now, one of them relates simply to the personal kind of experiences that we have and that we share, the places in which we were nurtured, the places in which we made certain discoveries, had certain epiphanies, came to certain realizations. Those places will always mean something to us. Would add in that category certainly a particular chevra, a particular social environment that brings out certain aspirations, that brings out a way in which we think and a way in which we experience. That's the type of thing that makes an experience a lifelong experience more than any other. And that's all, again, category number one. But I believe, and the Bali Musar, and even Chazal themselves in earlier writings, are quite clear about the fact that this is not an experiential nor a social connection between yeshiva, between the time that we spend in our formative years, learning in Beis Medrash and Tshuva. But rather it is a fundamental connection about the fact that we are doing something that relates to the heart of Tshuva every time we sit in Beis Medrash during afternoon Seder, every time we learn Daf Yomi, every time we open up in Mishnah Berurah, we are actually engaging in a Tshuva process. They told us all the time when we were in yeshiva. They told us all the time, and it's something which I tried to borrow. When you're in the right atmosphere, then the aseres you make tshuva don't last for 10 days. When you're in the right atmosphere, Kodesh Elul is almost as if it were the entire year. This is really the aseres you make tshuva. This is somebody said to me when I was in yeshiva. Yeshiva, Shana Aleph, Shana Bet, Shana Gimel, maybe you're lucky enough to spend even longer in yeshiva, is the Chodesh Elul, the Aseres Yimei Tshuva of your entire life. It is the Rosh Hashanah of our adult lives in many ways. And Elul, Aseres Yimei Tshuva, they really connect to the yeshiva experience. And even that idea, one step further, describes the fundamental connection between Talmud Torah and Tshuva. It has been pointed out by so many that when we speak about Tshuva in Shmona Esrei, Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sora Secha. Right there, three times a day, four today on Shabbos, well, we didn't say Hashiveinu, which is in there, so three times a day on a weekday, Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sora Secha. We ask that we be returned. We ask for the most successful possible process of tshuva. We ask Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sar Secha. We ask that that can contain in it a return to Beis Medrash, a return to learning. We know that tshuva, like so many of our Jewish ideals and experiences, has been misunderstood, mistranslated, and corrupted over the years. Tshuva does not mean self-improvement. Tshuva does not mean some kind of corrective act to our bad midos or behaviors. Self-improvement happens during tshuva. Of course, correction of our mistakes and our midos wrong happens during tshuva. But tshuva simply means to return. It is directional. To return to what? Where are we going? Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sora Secha. It is a return to the Ribono Shel Olam, to Dveikus, and to connection, to a life that has more meaning and more transcendent spirituality. And it is clear that the sole way to do that is through the learning that we do, through the learning that we engage in, through our commitment to Talmud Torah. We become different people, and our entire religious perspective takes on a different note. And while there are some very, very strong ideas about the value of Talmud Torah, and the fact that Talmud Torah is synonymous with Dveikus to the Borei Olam, I actually would like to focus on a different element of that connection, and like to explain how there is, amongst the many parts of Avoda that we need to be engaged in during Chodesh Elul, Aseret Yemei Tshuva, especially now, the days of Slichos, that we're starting in just a few minutes, one of the things that we should be committed to, in addition to working on our midos, in addition to working on our emunah, in addition to working on any sort of inclination that we have that needs corrective behavior, permit me to add one other objective, one other point of focus that is right up the alley of what we do in yeshiva. Permit me to add one more thing to the list. If you happen to have within arm's length a Rambam Hilchos Tshuva, you can take it out and follow along with me. But the Rambam has a famous and curious introduction to the notion of Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam, of course, who is so meticulous and careful about every word that is chosen, the Rambam, who prides himself not just on accurate word usage, but on organization of when and where he introduces certain ideas, the Rambam has a rather wordy and long preamble as he begins Hilchos Tshuva. And see if you can pick up on the style of learning that I learned in this Beis Medrash and rooms like it when I was in Karmiyava. They were just finishing the building 30 years ago. Didn't spend a lot of time in this building, never was in Shir, never really learned that much in this Beis Medrash itself, except for the very last days. I think there was Hanukkah Abayis that very year of Maishan Bet. But in this yeshiva, I picked up on certain things that allowed me to understand or to hear or to relate to certain shiurim on the Rambam in a different way. Let's learn an example of it. The Rambam writes as follows, and maybe it's almost better if you don't have it, because sometimes when we're listening carefully, we can pick up on certain nuances that we might have otherwise missed. Kol ha-mitzvot shebetorah, bein aseh bein lo saseh, im over adam ha-achas mehen, bein mezadon bein mishkaga. All of the mitzvahs of the Torah, whether we're talking about a mitzvah aseh, that you are mevatel, a mitzvah lo saseh, that you violate, whether you skip a day of tefillin or you eat chazer, either way, im over adam ha-achas mehen, if we dare violate any of those commandments, bein mezadon bein mishkaga, whether or not it was purposeful or by accident, kishayase tshuva v'yashuv mechato, kayiv lehisvados l'fnei hakel baruch hu. When you do tshuva, make sure that you engage in the act of vidui and a full confession before God. The Rambam goes on to quote a pasuk to explain or to at least source this idea. The Rambam declares vidui zeh olim kalach aleph, vidui zeh mitzvahs aseh. The Rambam establishes that this is a mitzvah, whether tshuva is or not, that this vidui is a mitzvah. And the Rambam concludes halakha, the long halakha, I'm not reading all of you right now, takes on mitzvah, how exactly do you engage in this verbal vidui? How exactly do you do it? Vidui dvarim, what the Rambam calls, takes on mitzvah, and the Rambam gives a description. I believe there are at least four, maybe more, oddities, striking points, and how the Rambam initially describes Hilchos Tshuva. Of course, included in those four is what he says and what he doesn't say. I would ask if we had more time and if we didn't have a plastic wrap between us, I'd ask for more audience participation. You could write it down, you could play along at home. You should be picking up on some of these things on your own. Probably most obvious is that if we were going to give in Perek Aleph, Halak Aleph, Hilchos Tshuva, a description of Tshuva, I don't know how many of us would run to Vidui right away. We don't, in fact. We've been engaged in Tshuva, you've been to many Sikhot, we've had many times of Espositus and introspection. We've been having experiences with Tshuva. Most of us have not yet recited a meaningful Vidui. The Rambam says that we haven't really done much of anything at all. Now, what it feels like to you? The Rambam himself articulates, it's in Perek Gimel, the different parts of Tshuva and the ones that we are even more familiar with. Karata, Kabbalah, Al-Hasid, distancing oneself from the Chayt. These are the things that we would imagine the Rambam would highlight as he described the laws of Tshuva, the nature of Tshuva. But no, the Rambam doesn't mention any of those things in Perek Aleph, Halakha Aleph. The Rambam doesn't describe any emotional state, any regret. The Rambam only emphasizes vidui and vidui dvarim. My favorite and the most subtle, and we're not going to speak about it now, maybe we'll have a chance in a future year or a future opportunity this year. My favorite and by far the most subtle of the observations that we can make, the oddities that are here, is the Rambam's use of the prefix, or the two prefixes, ishev, yaseh tshuva. The Rambam doesn't say, if you sin, you shall do tshuva. The Rambam doesn't say, when you sin, you shall do tshuva, since there's nobody who avoids sin completely. The Rambam says, when you sin, and when you do tshuva, you should recite vidui. Fascinating that the Rambam knew exactly what he was doing, that the Rambam chooses that description of tshuva, not as an if and not as a commandment. Either of those would have made perfect sense. Either of those would have been acceptable. Chayit or im, either one of those or both. Rather, the Rambam writes, when, theta conflict, there will come a time where you are drawn back. There will come a time when you hope to be better. There will come a time where you enter into this type of tshuva elul dialogue with the Ribono Shel Olam. Now let's talk about what you should do when that happens. Fait accompli. It's a striking formulation that the Rambam uses. But I have no doubt that you picked up on, working backwards through the Rambam, long before he gets to vidui, long before he says tiyasha tshuva, he has these two companion phrases at the very beginning. The first being bein asei, bein lo sasei. The second being bein b'shoge, bein b'meizeh. Bein asei, bein lo sasei is jarring a little bit. Even I'm sure some of you picked up the example that I gave. If there's a guy who's being suggested as a potential shidduch for your sister, and you're doing some research into this fellow, to make sure that he is matim, to make sure that he is on the same wavelength, the same level as she is. Somebody tells you, you know, three times this year, I think it's about three, I was his roommate for a while, I think he missed 3 days of tefillin this year. I don't know if that's good for your sister or not, I don't know your sister in most cases, but okay, you know something about the person, that person, a Russian Marusha, I'm not condoning missing tefillin three times in a year, that person capable to call himself in a legitimate way Shomer Torah or Mitzvos? We have the same reaction to an over losase, a person who tells you, I think three times this year he had kasher. I think three times this year, 52 Shabbos during the year, I'm pretty sure he was good for 49 of them. I think three of them, not so good. Again, I have no idea. Maybe that's the Basher for your sister. Could very well be. I'm not casting aspersions on anybody over here. But is that person in the same category as the person who missed? He's not a big sukkah guy. He eats outside the sukkah. He eats outside the sukkah. Or he's a huge sukkah guy. He never would eat out of the sukkah, but when he's in the sukkah, he eats a cheeseburger. Are those the same? So some suggest for sure, and we could go on, but some suggest for sure, maybe they are the same. Mishnah Pirkei Avos tells us, don't spend too much time ranking mitzvos and ranking averos. It doesn't work like that. And maybe the Rambam is emphasizing from the beginning, yeah, I know you think that some things aren't that big a deal. I know you shrug your shoulders at 3 days out of an entire year where a person missed tefillin, but don't do that. All of it requires shuvah. Don't be so nonchalant about the asay or the violation, the bittul of an asay. Don't be so nonchalant about the little things. We know the Rashi on Akev, the Medrash on Akev. Those things which we're nonchalant about and shrug our shoulders about, maybe shuvah should start there. Okay. The Rambam doesn't stop there. The Rambam throws in on the very second line, and this is, again, maybe not our favorite, it doesn't really matter how we rank them, once again, but this has got to be the most glaring of the questions. Well, what's the psychology that the Rambam is employing? Does the Rambam feel it necessary to stress Bein B'Shogeg, Bein B'Mezeh, Bein B'Zadon, Bein B'Shkadon? Really? As if to say there is an equivalency between those things? You want to make sure that this fellow that your sister wants to date, you want to just make sure he's Shomer Shabbos. He's Shomer Shabbos Jew. Somebody tells you three times during the year, I think he violated Shabbos. Okay, that's a concern. Not sure he can call himself Shomer Shabbos then if three times out of 52 he's not able to keep Shabbos. Well, I should add, I'm fairly certain that all three times at 2 o'clock in the morning, he woke up to go to the bathroom, he flipped on a light because he didn't remember it was Shabbos. Does that make a difference or it doesn't make a difference? It's almost flippant. The Rambam says, Bein B'Zadon, Bein B'Shkadon, as if that doesn't make a difference. So once again, you can say, maybe the Rambam is saying, no stone unturned. No Aveira too small. Maybe that's what the Rambam is saying, just like that's what we interpreted or suggested as an interpretation for the Rambam's comment of Bein Asay Bein Lo Sasay. Doesn't seem like that's correct. Doesn't seem like that's the correct interpretation of what this Rambam is saying. We grew up, and I'll argue in a moment that this is a mistake, but we grew up being told that like Shogeg and by accident, not my fault, right away it's like a get out of jail free card. It's really not, are you? And again, there's something, it's almost presumptuous for it to say, I need to do tshuva on my shogeg. Like your job interview, like what's the biggest sin you would say? Once, by accident, no, stop that. We can say that's not your biggest sin. Really, you're going to do tshuva on that? If you're starting on doing tshuva on your shogeg, doesn't it mean that you're leaving out some pretty important things? And remember, when you read anything closely, Rambam, Gemara, Pasuk, and Chumash, remember the rule of a mufta gezeir shava. What is the rule of a gezeir shava that's a mufta? It means when you have a thing, something that you think might be a question, you think it might be a diya, ask yourself why. Was it really necessary for the Rambam to say it? If the Rambam just meant to chew it for everything, so you should say the shuva for everything. Was anybody expecting to see shogeg in the first three lines of the first halacha? In the first paragraph of the Rambam of Shuva, the Rambam had to mention, don't forget about the shogeg. Don't forget about shkaga. Because lest you think that you don't have to chew it for a shogeg too, I'm here to tell you that you got to chew it for a shogeg too. Really? We wouldn't have missed it. Our elul would not have been much different. You get through the Yom Kippur, you finish the Ela, you feel very good about yourself, and your Rebbe says, what about the shogeg? Forget about the shogeg? Come on. All the girl games you did there. You beat it. No, but Rabbi, I'm telling you, I did good. This was good. I progressed a lot. I missed a couple. The Ram's like, no, if you get the show games, you forgot the whole thing. That's not, you got to be true on the show games. So, okay, maybe I'm paroxide. Paroxide, the Ram's like, by the way, if you have a few more minutes, please take care of the show games also. That's not what the Ram says. Paragal, halakal, bein v'zagdon, bein v'shkada. And maybe some of you have figured out already. And if we had more time, we could see how this relates to bein aseh, bein lo aseh, also, and the dagdon. Maybe some of you have figured out already that we are not being accurate in our description of a shogun. We're making a grade school mistake far beyond the learning level and the learning experience and the knowledge base of the people sitting before me right now. You're not going to make this mistake. A shogun is not an accident. An ones is an accident. A ones gomor is an accident for sure. In Hilchos Shabbos, misase is an accident. I'm walking there, and I don't know that there's a light switch over here, and I brush against it with my elbow, and all of a sudden, all of the lights flicker on. Oops, I did that. Generally speaking, that's called misase. That's called ones gomor. That's not my fault. And I would humbly suggest to you, although it's fairly explicit, I don't even know if it's a suggestion, I think it's just reading the Rambam. The Rambam would not come to any of us on Slichos night and say, let's do a quick evaluation of how many times you knock into a light switch with your elbow. Rambam doesn't ask us to do that. We're okay if a few times you knock the light switch with your elbow. The Rambam wants to know how many times you did an aver of a shogeg. In the Shabbos in particular, the definition of an aver of a shogeg is that I did not know it was Shabbos. That's the 2 o'clock in the morning scenario, not as innocent as it may sound, where I did not know that this malacha was a malacha. But I didn't attend her silver's halacha shiur. I didn't attend the posek's kabura. Nobody ever told me that I couldn't do that on Shabbos. I didn't know it was a malacha, or I didn't know it was Shabbos. And what those two things have in common is I didn't know. I didn't know is not an excuse. It's not a rationalization. It doesn't buy us what we think it buys us. And this is what the Rambam is suggesting to us. You are sitting in this base measure tonight. You have the money that has been invested in your own Jewish education. You have been introduced to a world of scholarship, a world of understanding, a world of insight, a world of Torah. And your excuse after all of that is, I'm a Tinoch Shenishba. I didn't know. Maybe, and again, I've tried to fine-tune the analogy to make it as really as accurate as possible. You used to speak about a husband who comes home to an expectant, not an expecting, an expected wife, the look on her face of anticipation. He's oblivious. He has a special meal prepared. He's oblivious. Finishes the entire meal. At this point, he's quite frustrated. Now he's not oblivious. Why are you so frustrated? Forgot, what? You forgot it was our anniversary. No, but I forgot. I didn't know. Can't be angry at me. I didn't know. And she's saying to him, idiot. That's the problem. It's not anything that you did. It's not the lack of flour. It's that you didn't know it was our anniversary. And I'll fine-tune it, because I think the fine-tuning is helpful in understanding what we're trying to say here. Imagine a fellow who's courting, the Bechirat Libovim, courting a woman that he hopes someday to be his wife. Or maybe it's a father who's interacting with his 9-year-old, 10-year-old daughter. And the father, or the guy, let's go with the father. The father wants to buy his 9-year-old daughter. He wants to buy her a special gift and a special present. He buys her strawberry ice cream. And she says to him, why? Well, because I love you, and because everybody loves strawberry ice cream. But I don't. I hate strawberry ice cream. My least favorite flavor. Or, I'm allergic. Deathly allergic to strawberries. And the father of his 9-year-old daughter, who's trying to do something nice, says it and he means it. Oh, sweetie, I didn't know. I feel so bad. If I had known that you hate strawberries, if I had known that strawberries could kill you, I never would have gotten you strawberry ice cream. The daughter is relieved. Oh, okay, fine, good. No, you're my, how did you not know? How were you not aware? It's not a good thing. Sometimes we point the finger at the other. Mishnah Pirkei Avos, Perek Hei, in Amaretz, below Amaretz Chasid. In Amaretz, a bore, the previous line of the Mishnah. Ain Bori Arishamayim, Ain Amaretz, below Amaretz Chasid. Person who wallows in a certain degree of ignorance. Person who doesn't recognize how much Talmud Torah and knowledge and understanding enhance our relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. Ignorance may be bliss, but the Mishnah of Perek Avos tells us ignorance does not make us Abde Hashem. Ignorance, even Emunah Pshuta. Emunah Pshuta is not silly Emunah. Emunah Pshuta, as many have pointed out, is not Pashut at all. Emunah Pshuta emerges, and a clarity and an understanding of what real Emunah is emerges from knowledge, from understanding, from learning. The Rambam is saying that if we define Shogeg as some degree of I did not know, then that's the tshuva that we need to do. Rav Soloveitchik is quoted as saying something very similar in explaining the world-famous question about why we have the actually bizarre practice of starting Yom Kippur with Kol Nidre, which is such an uninspiring tefillah, at least on the surface. I say to people, I mean, people have pointed this out all the time, you don't need me to raise this question. But if you ask a person, you're going to offer them $10,000. They don't know Hebrew. $10,000 to take a crack at it, to do their best to try to put in even just keywords in a word cloud of what they think is being chanted. When we take the Sifrei Torah out of the Aron Kodesh and everybody's wearing white and you have this haunting tune, Kol Nidre, what do you think is being said there? And then you have them, the reveal. You let them read an article from Austin like, really? That's what all my vows and then seven synonyms for vows should be annulled in any way that it could be annulled. It's crazy. And Kol Nidre is Kol Nidre. Why? And everybody asks that question. There are a lot of different answers. Rav Soloveitchik, one of the answers that Rav Soloveitchik is quoted as having suggested is that we mentioned before Charata for an Avera. Charata comes up in the halachic universe. Charata and Pesach are the two ways that vows get annulled. And in Charata, in that method, and in Pesach as well, actually, the way in which a vow is annulled is that a person comes before Bez and it doesn't talk about their regret, but they say, if I only knew then what I know now, I never would have done it. And Rav Soloveitchik says in his beautiful poetic way, an observation that Rav Soloveitchik, again, if you study the works of Rav Soloveitchik, you appreciate how common this line of thinking was. Rav Soloveitchik says, just pause, rewind, play that back. If I only knew then what I know now, I never would have done it. If I only knew then what I know now, I never would have done it. But with a better chazan, I would introduce slichos by saying that sentence a third, fourth, and fifth time in the Kol Nidre. I would sing it to you. And you recognize that that's what we're saying when the Aron Kodesh is open and the Sifrei Torah come out and we're wearing white. I should have, I could have known more. I do now. Hashiveinu avinu l'sorasecha. That's what my tshuva is all about. That's what tshuva is meant to be. To promise myself, I am not going to be, I can't be smarter than I am. I can't raise my IQ, I can't take a pill, I can't do that. But I can also know everything that I'm capable of knowing. I can also actually, instead of dabbling just in a world of emotions and inclinations and intuitions, actually have a strong, what the Bali Musar described, what the value of Chazorah is for a person. It's toughless. Biyadcha. I learned something, and I know it. And my relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam is different because of the depth of my understanding of his Torah. That's what Ashivenu Avinu L'Sefer Sechem means. It's a process not just of growth, not just of meditation. It's something which of course happens when we learn Sifrei Musar, and of course it happens when we take a long walk back to the dorm under a beautiful sky and we think and we reflect. It needs all of those things. It happens when we play guitar. It happens when we listen to music. It happens when people chaverim. But it also happens, and maybe even it primarily happens, when we open up Cheskas Habatim, when we open up Iksos, when we learn Torah Hashem Yisbara, when we learn and we understand, we fulfill Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sefer Sechem. My amoratzus, my ignorance, is not going to motivate my decisions, and I will not allow it to be an impediment to my relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. The Lo Am Ha'aretz Chassid. And if the yeshiva says to you, we're going to move mountains in order so that we have an opportunity, this Elul and this Yom Ha'aretz, to learn, to be in Beis Medrash, and the yeshiva assures us and guarantees us that this is the opportunity that we're meant to have, that we're going to have, and it provides it for us, we must take full advantage of Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sefer Sechem. We must take full advantage and say, oh, why do you have a kid who's learning in the Middle East, in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of a war? Why didn't you just bring him home? Why doesn't he watch Netflix like everybody else? Why didn't he take an online class like everyone else and sleep a little later and, you know, Shiveinu Avinu L'Sefer Sechem. Below Amar Ha'aretz. Bein v'zadon, bein v'shkaga, says the Rambam. Don't think not knowing is an excuse. Not knowing is the problem. Start with the showcase. The Mazin, Taiva, Yitzhahara, Kodesh Baruch Hu might look the other way on some of those. Might, I don't know. But Bishkada? All of the things that you could have, should have, had you known you wouldn't have done and you could have known, that's where Tshuva is. I'm not going to be ignorant. I'm going to make data-driven decisions. That's a big word in corporate speak and in investment banking. I'm not going to follow my gut or follow my heart and do whatever I feel like any given day. I'm going to know something and understand what the Ribono Shel Olam wants from me. I'm going to understand what is Torah, what is Chagim, what is Halacha, what is Mitzvot. I'm going to understand what they are about. I'm going to sweat at my shtender, at my table during Shir, so that I can learn and understand a little bit more about the Ribono Shel Olam's Torah, and as the Rambam writes elsewhere, by doing so, to learn a little bit more about the Ribono Shel Olam himself. And that becomes the ultimate fulfillment of what Tshuva is meant to be, of Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sefer Sechem. And that's why the connection between your experiences, between my experiences, in this base metric are so important and so strong. What I would not want to imagine, even when forced to, of a better or different place to be on Leil Slichos, would be surrounded by our Rambams and by our Acharonim and by Shas and by Poskin, by our Rebbeim and by our seats in the Beis Medrash, so that we can literally and figuratively fulfill Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sefer Sechem. Because Baruch Hu puts impediments in front of us to see how much we will work, how hard we will work, how much we will move to reach that goal and destination. Luckily for us, most of that hard work is done. We have just a few more steps into the Beis Medrash, just a few more steps away, which are not blocked by any sort of seger, any sort of closure, any sort of impediment. It's just up to us to know more, to understand more, and to become ever closer to the Ribono Shel Olam. And that's the context with which we get to say Slichos in just a few minutes, and to daven Yom HaNorah, and starting a week from today.